next on the agenda. Winter dredge survey.
Hey, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon, Rob.
And I was thinking of one thing earlier, probably since we've all been in high school, that's the closest we came to a 20-minute lunch. I don't know how we did it in high school, quite frankly, but we did.
We didn't have as much to eat, perhaps.
That's true. One request here for the commission to inform you. If you look at the agenda item, it does talk about regulations, but today is just going to be the winter dredge survey. There's a couple of reasons that we want to move those items. Instead of ask you today for a public hearing on the regulations that need to be changed, we want to wait till May and then handle those in June, because there is no regulatory changes that we anticipate that can't wait until June, including the request to on the crab dredge fishery, which has to be cited each year where we close that fishery, and any changes to the regulations that we have for small eaters other than crab pot, all of that can wait. And so that's one aspect. We didn't want to stack up the cobia issue in May with the crab issue. That's one reason. Another reason is that we do have a standing committee, the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and I'll report just a little bit on about that on the end. It's been very difficult, and it's going to be more difficult in the summer to get a quorum for that committee that is chaired by Hussaini Kellum. So very difficult to get folks here. We had six the other night. So as you'll see at the last slide I have, I'm trying to get everyone invested in having a dialogue. It won't be votes, but at least it will be the opinions of the members of that committee who didn't have a chance to come the other night. So this is just a lot of information right here on a table. The main thing is to look at these last couple of years, 2014 through 2016. Obviously, 2016, a pretty good year for overall amount of crabs. This is crabs of all sizes and all sexes. And if you really think about it, you may remember that everyone talked about the disappointment of the high number of juveniles back in 2012 that never really recruited to the fishery very adequately. And was it red drum? Was it cannibalism? There were all sorts of situations of natural mortality that were referenced. So really, when I looked at this, I think the closest we've been is 2010 and 11. And those were times where have a fair amount of juveniles in each of those years, especially 2010, and also these what we call female spawners, meaning that they, when they're collected by the winter dredge survey from December to March, they are of a size greater than 2.4 inches in carapace width that they will spawn, some even in late May, probably most in the July-August period. That's why they're called spawners. And so that was a good situation 2010-11. The other good situation is the baywide harvest was very good. If you start to look down after 2011, really things fell off quite a bit. 2015, the year we just finished, the baywide harvest comes in just under 50 million pounds. The other thing we look at, and I'm going to have a few detractions about this as we go through, is this removal rate on female crabs. So this means that in 2015, it was determined that 15% of the female crabs, age, all ages from juveniles up, were removed by the fisheries. And I'll talk about that a little bit as we go. So this all breaks down into sort of individual plots of information that I'm going to cover very quickly, really. This is the total abundance. And so here's the 553 here. And you can see the troubling part of our history was 1998 to 2008. And 2008 is when the 34% reduction in female harvest occurred in all the bay jurisdictions. And while you were discussing coal rings earlier, 2008, July 1st, is when the 2 3/8-inch coal ring was put in place by the commission. We had two smaller coal rings from 1993 up until 2008, July, and they were 2 3/16 and 2 5/16. And you heard the comments about coal rings being blocked off. Well, they were allowed, the larger coal ring was allowed to be blocked off in the main stem of the bay all the way from 1993 to 2008. And in the tributaries, it was not allowed to be blocked off. So the coal ring, very important. In fact, the 2 3/8-inch coal ring provided some of our 34% reduction in female harvest. And these are the juveniles, which are all also called age zero. Age is a bit of a misnomer. They can age crabs. It's a very expensive process to do it. It has been done at Chesapeake Biological Laboratory and Old Dominion University in two different methods, but essentially the crabs aren't really aged. So an age zero crab is one that is less than 60 millimeters or less than 2.4 inches on its carapace, which tip to tip. And you know, if you look at everything together, all the age one crabs, males and females, you see that there has been a shifting up period to 2016. And I think as you go through this, you'll see situations where, again, 1998 through about 2008 is what I call a trough in abundance for all the size classes. And no reason there was a big response from the entire Chesapeake Bay jurisdictions. This is female blue crabs that are spawning age crabs. For example, here's 2016. They were collected December 15th through March 15th, some period within there. Estimated how many would be there total. And this is the value, and it's a pretty solid value at $193 million. The target is $215 million. And that's only been reached twice that you may see in the charts. The last time was 2010. And once in the 90s. So these are the female crabs that will spawn coming up in late May in the first spawning period and or in July and August. And yes, crabs do spawn more than once. That's one of the situations that we all face, is that there's much talk about crabs are a crop, a one-year crop that we're sort of taking out crabs pretty fast. That's why the commissioner 2 years ago decided that maybe we change our management framework and get the advice of two dredge surveys and we go July to July, which was a pretty good idea, because otherwise we were always coming in with the recommendations of the winter dredge survey now. This is earlier than the last few years, in April, and the fishery's already started. So you can't put the brakes on something that's already started. This is the control rule for abundance, and all this means we were actually here in 2014. And if I say 2014, it means the 2013-2014 winter dredge survey. We always use the last year to denote that survey year. So we were below that 70 million, if you remember, right here, just below it at 68 million, just 2 years ago, climbed up a little bit, and are at 193, still a little less than this 215 million spawning age female crabs. The male abundance is something to think about. There's various studies that do and do not indicate the importance of males. So by that, is there sperm limitation? Are there multiple partners, which an ODU study showed that in order to be inseminated, female crabs would have more than one partner. That was a study under John McConaughey, one of his students. So it goes back and forth as to the male crabs, but we hit a real low point here at 25 million in 2014. It has climbed up, and you know, right now there's a situation called a stock assessment. It hasn't been done since 2011. There's an interest by the Bay jurisdictions, but there's a very big resistance at the same time, because we want to make sure that the male component also gets good treatment as the female component has since 2011. And the reason there's resistance, the stock assessment, what we heard yesterday, and this started in February of 2015, so that's how long this has been dragging on. It has a pretty good price tag of $400,000. And unlike 2011, before that, this agency, Maryland DNR, really don't have ready money. NOAA has been the one that's contributed the most in the past. But, you know, part of the reason we were able to contribute before is because we received funding in 2009 for disaster relief. And both Maryland and Virginia were able to furnish $150,000, and NOAA furnished almost $400,000, or a little over $400,000. That was a $700,000 study. And so the assessment going forward is getting a very critical eye, both from the economic portion, but also the Bay jurisdictions want to make sure that they get the right questions answered. And so right now it still isn't finalized as to when that assessment will take place. This is something to show you the composite, and I think it accentuates here in the yellow color, it accentuates for overall crabs this dip from 1998 to 2008. You know, around that, the tails around that in the very early years in the 90s through about 1997 and after 2008, you know, really show fairly good trends. You did have this situation here in 2013-14 where there was low abundance. And you can trace that with juveniles, the same situation, with the female spawners in blue. A little harder to pick up, but you do see the large influx of female crabs in 2010 and 11 that, you know, made for a pretty good fishery in the Bay. And actually for us in Virginia, 2011 was a little bit better than 2010. And then the males, it's a little harder to pick up the trend, but you do see this uptick in 2016. So one thing to think about is we still wait each year, all of us, for the winter dredge survey results, but really we should also figure out ways outside the assessment on what this information tells us on how to manage. Because, you know, for many years the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee merely said the jurisdiction should hold their regulations pretty constant, don't take any fast steps, anything like that. And we need some better advice from CBSAC. And here's the information on the harvest, just under 50 million pounds in 2015. Right here, you can see that Virginia harvest right in here, which is about 22 million. Potomac River Fisheries Commission, I think less than 2 million or close, and Maryland the rest. And if you look at just the female harvest, you can see the differences. Virginia is just about 12 million pounds of female harvest from crabs, and Maryland 5.6 million, and Potomac River is a little over 500,000 right here. So you can track those, but again, look back here. Is it all effort-driven? You know, we know the effort was much larger back here, but when you look at some of the early 90s, there were, even with all those crabs, there was overfishing. And in fact, I'm going to go back just for a second here to show you that you go from 1998 to 2008, that's 11 years. Eight of those 11 years were associated with overfishing or even an overfished condition in one or two cases. So what kind of effect does that reverberate through the population as you go forward? Unsure. We know that crabs, the average age of a crab out there is 1.5, 1.6 years old. We're pretty sure that crabs live to age 6, and so that gives you an indication that we really do treat this like an annual crop, and it's probably time to, you know, do things differently to make sure that these spawning crabs are available. So the juveniles that I showed you, the important aspect there is those juveniles from the winter dredge survey are the spawning crabs in 2017. So that's our future spawning. This shows you something about male blue crabs, and you can see the difference now. It shifted. Maryland certainly has a larger proportion at 21.2 million. Virginia, not even quite half of that. This is a different control rule, and this is really looking at the removal rate. And as you can see, since 2008, really, no problem with the removal rate. And in fact, some of the harvesters have said, wait a minute, we're not removing beyond what we should. You know, we're not up here in the danger zone, this pinkish area where you definitely don't want to be, but where the stock has been before. Well, there are a few things about the removal rate that are problematic that we need answers to. One is, it's figured out this way. It's very simple. It's the harvest divided by the average abundance as of January 1 of all sizes of female crabs, of all sizes. So that's the abundance. The problem is, where are the discards, the dead discards, and do they occur? Yes, they occur. They occur in the summertime in the pot fishery. They occur in the peeler fishery, especially in the spring with green crabs. I mean, yes, there are losses throughout the season, throughout the bay, but we tend to just not factor them in at all. The other thing that's a little bit of a problem is the recreational harvest. We had a study which was termed a first-order estimate, meaning a rough estimate done in 2001 for recreational fishery. That's all we have. Maryland's had about three studies, but when you put everything together, we assume that it's roughly 4% in Maryland because they don't allow female crabs in the recreational harvest, and it's 8% in Virginia, but we keep each year saying that's what it is, and we don't know. I think another situation might rest with the idea that we really don't have a good method on improving upon this right now. There's one little study, from what I understand, that's been done in Maryland at the boats to get a handle on some of this discard mortality, and I think that that might help. So, you know, we do wonder about the exploitation rate. The biggest problem of all is that when the assessment was done in 2011, it assumed that only 40% of the age zero or juvenile crabs were censused by the dredge apparatus. So the other night I asked Mike Sebo from VIMS, who's part of the VIMS winter dredge survey team. I said, is it about 10 feet that boat can get to? He said, no, you can really get to 6 or 7 feet. So imagine the crabs that you don't get to. And the assumption here is that 40% is every year since 2011. It never changes. And that's sort of an Achilles heel, because the exploitation rate, what happens is you divide the abundance, you factor in 0.4 into that, you divide by 0.4, you expand the abundance of all sizes of female crabs, and it's static. You don't really know what's going on. So that's one problem that we're very worried about in Chesapeake Bay, is getting a handle on the exploitation rate. This is the males that are removed. I think this is something to watch pretty carefully. There's not a really good guideline. There's this conservation trigger that they watch that to make sure that the males' exploitation rate isn't beyond that, and it did dip down these last couple of years. But we need something a little more definitive. I think the advice that's been given to us by the scientists is that everyone would be bollocksed up by trying to manage with a female control rule and a male control rule. Maybe that's the case, but in any event, we need to keep a better handle on the males as well. So this is something I put together. It shows essentially the good times, and there are several messages here. One is, if you look at these years, they're scrambled according to the overall abundance from highest in 1993 down to the lowest, 2011. And you see 2016 here, which is, you know, towards the lower 25% probably anyway. But one thing to tell you, if you look at this, out of 27 years, there are 11 that have really good overall abundance. The next thing to look at, which I shaded in yellow, is the dredge survey results, where you have an abundant amount of juveniles and an abundant amount of female spawners. Because the way it works, whatever the female spawners are, and the male spawners for that matter, so we can do both together, that's your spring fishery. That's your fishery all the way into some part of July. and your juveniles are all recruiting by August, late August, and into the fall. So you really have two segments here which have been important. So out of the 27 years of winter dredge survey, there are four that have been really good. I mean, in terms of, you know, promoting good fisheries. And you see what happened. 1 year, 90 million pounds, just at the edge of, you know, this exploitation rate of being a problem. Another year, 85 million pounds, low exploitation. Even though I'm going to show the exploitation, please consider my earlier comments. Here, down to 67 million pounds in 2011, and good exploitation. But again, we need to search out this exploitation pretty carefully. And I tried to take our own data and configure it to this by looking at our spring harvest and our fall harvest for those years. And what I found was sort of a mixed message. Some years it did hold for Virginia that if you had a high abundance of juveniles, you had a really good fall harvest, late summer fall harvest. Some years, if you had a really good amount of female spawners, you had a really good spring harvest in Virginia. What I'm missing is this is bay-wide information, and we need to do this with our jurisdictional sisters and look at data that way. We need to start looking at data from a forecast way, and I think that's one way to look at it. They already can predict through the winter dredge survey roughly what the harvest is going to be in a year. Now it's probably time to break that down by jurisdiction and by time of year. So this is our own data. Adam put this together, and it shows the 22, really almost 23 million pounds here in 2015. So we did, you know, make some increases back from that low period of 2013. And this shows the fisheries, the hard pot fishery and the peeler pot fishery. And you can see the changes there. The peeler pot fishery has been roughly in this million pounds since 2007 or close to it. Of course, it was much larger. I think 2002, which isn't shown here, we had about 2.4 million pounds for the peeler pot fishery. At the Crab Management Advisory Committee, I frankly said, you know, we are waiting for your reports. We need to report all the peelers you take out of the water. Please don't report just the crabs that shed out. We need to know what you take out of the water, and you're going to do yourself a disadvantage, is what I told them, because eventually this allocation, which is part of the watershed agreement for 2018, eventually that's going to happen at some point. And so we need to be counted as an industry. So here's the hard pot harvest, and you get some catch per unit information. It's pretty basic. It's harvest per trip or harvest per harvester. So you get the number of harvesters here in 2004 at 940, amount of trips, 58,000 plus, the pounds that were harvested by that gear, and then the harvest per harvester and the harvest per trip, and you jump down to 2015. And if you look throughout here, there's some pretty good similarities. You really don't see a lot of variation. What you really have to see here, and staff has done this before, will probably do it for June, is the categories. So we have five categories of pot licenses. This information needs to be viewed on a category-specific basis. And this is for the peeler pot, same type of information. You do see one thing that's pretty pronounced. We really fell off after 2004 in the number of harvesters, you know, got under 300. And I think there's probably about, there's got to be close to 900, 890 that are eligible to get a license and be in this fishery. So, you know, that has stayed at a pretty low level. Shows the trips and the pounds and the harvest per trip. These are small gears, not peeler pot, in other words, and they are small. I mean, when you look at the crab pot fishery, it's probably about 95% right now by weight. Everything else is 5%. But by number, obviously the peeler pot fishery is more important as far as number of crabs. when you think that there might be close to five, roughly five per pound, I think is what DIMS used years ago. This is just a brief note about the CMAQ meeting that we held on the 19th. And it shows here that I've extended sort of an invitation to the CMAQ members. And it was a good meeting. I mean, there were only six members. It was a good meeting, and they had some good comments. And so things for you to think about for June is what they have recommended. Even though there wasn't a quorum, they couldn't vote. They are looking forward to a March 1 through December 20th season. Right now, that's been March 17th. It went through December 15th in 2012 and 2013. This is based on the early part, at least, the March 1, on the fact that there has been some climate change. There have been winters that, you know, by the time you get to early March, it's pretty warm. We saw that in 2012. As a matter of fact, they harvested a lot of crabs in 2012 in March. And it's an economic situation. The industry's not doing too well already. I think Ms. Haney Kellum can probably give us a better insight on that than I can, but the people who have called me, they aren't too happy because the infrastructure, as many of you know, is not what it was for picking houses. The labor problems, which A.J. Erskine knows about very well, and the delays there has been a problem, and the price dropped pretty quickly for crabs. So one thing is you do get competition from North Carolina early, so this proposal for March 1 was based on an economic consideration. You'll hear more in June. And then we have had, the last couple of years, a truncated season for the small gears. So, for example, peeler pot and the other crab trap, crab scrape, whatever it might be, started April 21st this year, just started a few days ago. And they're recommending it go back to April 1 through October 31st. And part of why I want this dialogue, I've already had one complaint that April 1 might be too early because in certain areas they don't want to see everyone rush down and start picking out male peelers as fast as they can. So I hope to get more comments on all of this. So for these small gear, they're recommending a little longer season. This season stops September 25th in 2015, so this would be an extra 5 weeks. And the way it works is on the peeler pot fishery, on the western shore, you know, if you have an early shed and everything, and if you have an early run of peelers, they do get impacted, even though May is still about 45% to 50% of that fishery. The western shore gets impacted in the spring. You go up the bay, Tangier, other areas get impacted in the fall. They still have what are known as crawling pots going, habitat pots, and they are still shedding out crabs into October. So that was the reason for that particular recommendation. And the last thing is Commissioner Bull had asked the committee to look at a situation we had this year where there's a crab pound or a crab trap. Think of a pound net and then think of a miniature version for a crab trap. It has a leader, it has a funnel, it has heart, it has all this equipment that can't be set out easily. And so what happened was there was a big uproar from a particular area that, what do you mean we can't set this gear out? We're not going to put the pound or the crab catcher in place until the season. But if we wait until the season to start putting out all this various gear, it's going to be 10 days or whatever until we're really ready to go. And so Commissioner Bulla asked me to, you know, poll the committee on that, and they indicated 2 weeks. So that there should be a two-week period before the season starts for the crab pound that they be allowed to place the gear there. And law enforcement's fine with that. As long as we put it in the regulation. I mean, law enforcement had correctly enforced the regulation, which said essentially no gear in the water until April 21st. So, you know, that'll be something that's good to think about. We then had some comments down here at the bottom, just to put in the back of your mind, that on the recreational end, there's a request to extend the season for those who are licensed. So there's two types of recreational crabbers.
everyone can have two pots per person, or you can get a license and get five pots, which gives you three extra pots. This is talking about the license situation where they're held to a June 1 to September 15 season right now, and the request is to extend that really a month on either end. The other part of that is in 2008, that's when all this came about. This was all when all the jurisdictions were figuring out how to help that trough that I showed you quite a few times. Sundays have also been closed for them, and the request is to allow the Sunday. And these are in one of our other regulations, 670. So that is what I have. We're back to see you in June on regulations and changes. We don't think, I mean, when you look at all that, you know, we don't think it's still time to just, you know, 1 year makes or breaks anything. We were just depleted 2 years ago, which is the worst place you can have a stock to be depleted. We've bounced back because crabs are known as our strategists. You know, they produce a lot of young. They don't care for them. They've got 2 million eggs, roughly, is what's been estimated, and they bounce back. But, you know, you have to be very cautious because in that one slide I showed you with the 11 years and then four that had good juveniles and good female spawning age crabs, you also have to realize that there are seldom 2 years back-to-back that are good. You know, that's really difficult, and it's because of recruitment. It's because of what you heard about before. There's a lot of environmental influences on recruiting these megalope larvae back into our bay. And so we have to do the best we can do despite not being able to control the environment. So thank you.
Thank you, Rob. All righty. Next on the agenda is...
I got a question.
Rob, there's a question from the commissioner.
Sure. You talked about the call rings and the size, and you talked about all these spawners and everything like that. And I guess you were in here when we had one of the offenders that had multiple call ring violations, and also where the, I guess, the wire mesh was not properly open so that the small crab that you're talking about can get out. Well, how important is it for us? And you also heard the testimony from the lady that said that everybody, when it gets tight, everybody out there in the industry is doing that so that the small crabs don't get out of the pot. So should we be taking a closer look at those kind of violations?
Yes, we should, but I think there are cases. What we should do is really look at all the coal ring cases we've had out of the cases that you've had as a commission since probably September of 2013 and see what that looks like and then go from there. But what they're doing with the blocking the coal rings is there is escapement of legal size female crabs, and that's what they're preventing. So that's your spawning potential. When the studies were done back in 1987 and again back in 1993, it showed that you do have a good situation as far as letting the smaller crabs go, even before we had the 2 3/8, but you would retain so many of the females and you would let so many go. And the percentage was pretty low at that time. I'd have to look back, but I'd say it was probably on the order of 8 or 9% of mature females would escape. And in the main stem bay, it's the female crab mecca. And so that's why until 2008, there was such resistance by the industry to have an open, larger coal ring. Now they have to be open, so it's even more critical. And I think it's hard to judge, you know, how many of those crabs that escape get caught in other pots because it's a clump distribution. So you know that some of the crabs that escape will get caught in other pots. But those females are essentially, that's the size they're going to get. They're mature. And, you know, you hope they get to the spawning either in late May or July, August.
Thank you.
So, yeah, good question.
Thank you, Rob. Any other questions for Rob? Thank you.